It's another Tacky Talk time with State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy. Our weekly discussions ranging from the sublime to the absurd. Hi, Tacky.
Well, given today is day after election day, we can go absurd if you like.
All right, let's start there then. First of all, how are you?
Well, they're doing not too bad. I know it's getting a little bit chillier, and I'm actually feeling it in my bones like everybody else. But overall, it's been pretty good week thus far, even though it's only Wednesday. And it's obviously good to see you again and a chance to chat with everybody from the comfort of my living room.
Yes.
Dining room, not living room. My dining room doesn't have anybody to raise a stack four or five wall books in front of me to get this elevation of screen eye time.
We're going to have to add like a cooking segment to this, I think, you know, seeing as you're in your dining rooms, have to have some recipes with Tacky.
Well, I think we did the Democratic caucuses this past spring. I thought it was going to be relatively quick, but didn't realize there was a long dead period of just conversation. I was making dinner in the midst of the dead zone of conversation until I was told by Alicia, turn your camera on. Okay. And next thing you know, they see me, you know, elbow high in flour, egg, and salmon as I'm making salmon fritter-ish type fried salmon thing. So it became like a Tacky cooking lesson in the middle of the caucus dead space because we had dead space. This is a kind of challenge of Zoom, right? I mean, yeah. If we're in person, you know, you can, you know, congregate in small groups to talk. You can separate out, you can move from group to group, table to table. On this kind of Zoom format, when you have dead space, it really is kind of extremely awkward.
Yeah, it, some people still, you know, haven't mastered it quite yet. They don't quite understand that you are live and everybody can see and hear you no matter what you're doing.
Precisely. And we've had it, it happened a few times in my public hearings when technical difficulties when the testifiers end, and we didn't realize those technical difficulties for a while. Yeah. Because it's not really apparent. And of course, people know that this is, you know, record this off of the legislature website, and we also provide streaming on my Facebook page, the State Representative Tacky Chan Facebook, so you can actually see the live stream. But every so often, it is kind of unusual circumstance where your people just have a technology issue. We just wait because maybe they reconnect, or maybe there's just like dead air because we're not quite sure what's happening, and staff is trying to sort out technology problems on testifier side. And there'll be phone calls made from staff to testify, trying to see if they can resolve a technical issue. Now we're kind of in this dead spot, and it's hard to do a funny in video format because you're not quite sure if you are funny. So it becomes like this problem of small talk.
That's right. Actually, let's talk a little bit about, pandemic era rules in the State House. I know that I think it was this past Monday was the deadline for members to show proof of vaccination. Is that right?
All members as well as staff are required to have vaccination approved, or unless they have one of the two exemptions or sincere religious belief, or they have a doctor's note indicating they have other conditions that prevents them to take the vaccine. They'll all upload electronically in PDF or a picture format to human resources. I do not know what the status of that is. Of course, it's a health, it's a human resource matter. So I suspect maybe they'll tell us in aggregate. Obviously, we can't find out people's personal information individually. You can't release individual health information, but you can release information aggregate, provided that it's aggregate doesn't create identifying identifiers. So we haven't got word yet, but I suspect based on those vaccination responses, we're largely determined about the reopening of the building.
Okay, and it's not the same though for the Senate side, is that right?
Senate's adopted the same procedure. Oh, unfortunately, okay. I can't tell you what's going on over there. I'm assuming they're using the same methodology because I have a hard time believing they're not. I mean, get us a copy of the card somehow. But they're also a smaller body, folks. I mean, that's actually kind of people forget. We're 160, they're 40. They control about one third of the space in the State House. And they have individual offices where they can, they have three separate rooms. They can actually keep the staff segregated. So what? And they also can limit people's access into offices through the individual doors. The House side is much more crammed in. We control probably about half the space in the building. The other remaining amounts controlled by the constitutional officers and administrative offices. That's nothing to do with the House or the Senate. And you know, I also like the hearing rooms, right, including that. So you know, we're much more crammed in, and that could just be our concern. I was in the office on, let's see, on Monday, because I was doing the interview of Channel 25. And we did an outdoor interview in Ashburton Park. But I mean, again, when I came to my office, I keep forgetting exactly how stale the air is until I actually sat down at my desk and realized the air doesn't move.
Right. And now, you know, getting into the heating season. So windows are going to be closed a lot more, too.
Absolutely. And my system is a forced hot water system or hot liquid system. So it's just basically a hot pipe with some fan underneath it blowing off the heat. So temperature control is actually very challenging in my office. And, you know, as a result, there is no true airflow because it's not air moving in one vent and out the other vent. It's just circulating the same air in the room. So, yeah, this is kind of my office space. And a lot of our spaces are similarly situated.
Yeah.
Like I said, you don't really think about it till you actually, like, sit there and think about, oh, these are things now I have to be aware of that for decades I never had to think about.
Yeah, that's what a pandemic does to you. You know, that and many other things that have changed forever in our lives, for sure. Yeah.
Absolutely. So, you know, stay tuned. I mean, obviously, the close of session is coming up on the 17th of November. If the speaker wants to actually try to stay the calendar, obviously, he doesn't have to under emergency rules, but if he's trying to stay the calendar, unless a crisis appears. And, you know, given there's only about, you know, essentially 15-ish days left in, you know, the regular calendar session. You know, perhaps it's wiser just to reopen the building next year and give us the holiday season to do more preparation for reopening. But like I said, I'm still not entirely clear myself. I just know that there are multiple steps involved in getting a sense of the vaccination status for employees as they require.
Sure. As you mentioned, we are recording this the day after the election, and I was curious to get your reaction to mostly the Boston mayoral race, Tacky, and how you feel about what happened there.
Well, I mean, it's the campaign of inevitability. I mean, that's what I tell folks about this stuff. For those who don't know, I've been doing this my entire adult life. I've been watching campaigns of both big and small, and even overseas. Trying to glimmer some education from watching other people do things that may apply to me. You never know, right? You learn from looking at other races and how campaign techniques have changed. And, you know, the polling had shown Michelle Wu doing extremely well. And I can congratulate Michelle and her team on putting together a really strong campaign, surviving a really complex preliminary, working in a pandemic situation. And going into, you know, a sprint final, November 2nd, it's very fast time frame. So meanwhile, I mean, you have Anissa Savvy George, who came in very late into preliminary, you know, was not expected to survive the preliminary, crack through it, but was unable to consolidate people that weren't with Michelle Wu into her camp. And this is kind of where she ended up, unfortunately, and the polling reflects that. You know, it's a tough gig in this politics, as we all know, running campaigns and then watching it all. You know, I wish Michelle Wu and the new city councilors in Boston the very best, as the inaugural is going to come up in about two or so weeks. There'll be no transition time
from
Kim Janey. And there was really no transition time from Marty Walsh to Kim Janey as well. So you've had three mayors essentially in one calendar, Marty Walsh. Kim Janey was the first person of color woman to be mayor of Boston. And now you have the first person of color and woman elected as mayor of Boston.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's very historical, but in many ways in one calendar year.
Yeah.
You know, some other fun races. I mean, Yvonne Spicer lost her race in Framingham, the first Black mayor in the Commonwealth, a Black woman, and also the first mayor of Framingham, you know, when it became a city. She got defeated pretty badly, actually, in Framingham, much to a lot of my surprise, because, you know, incumbents generally do well, particularly mayor incumbents, which have all the advantages on so many levels being a mayor. You know, my friend Amy Marcingiolio ran against an incumbent in Newton. Sadly, she didn't make the cut. Ocherty Bambury, I can't enunciate her name correctly, but, you know, she's a friend of ours from the State House. She was a staffer for a representative of Marjorie Decker for many years. She made the cut for school committee. So it's good to see an Indian American elected to office in Massachusetts, which again is a very few number of Indian Americans elected. So it's good to see a young woman make the cut, so to speak, and see where she goes from there. So even though, you know, they're not, you know, mayors and they're not state reps or state senators or congresspeople, I mean, these seats for school committee and council and aldermen and, you know, things like the housing authorities. I mean, some places elected housing authority members or municipal light board members. I mean, those are still very important elected positions that, you know, all people should try to run for and make a real difference in people's lives.
Yeah. Are you encouraged? I mean, given all the talk that you and I have had over the past year and a half about anti-Asian violence as a result of the pandemic, to see Michelle succeed. I think Cincinnati also had an Asian American elected, I don't know if it was mayor or other position, but taking some leadership roles, you know, given what's happened to the Asian American community.
Yeah, we're still collectively, even in aggregate, the smallest demographic of electeds in Massachusetts and nationally, actually. Mm. So those of you who know myself and people like Councilor Lena Liang and Michelle Wu and, you know, people who were elected, such as Lisa Wong and Leland Clement, Leland Chung Clement, whoever they are, Leland Chung. But, you know, there's not that many of us collectively in the state. I understand there's like an Indian person elected in Needham Board of Selectmen. I know there's some Chinese school community people that have been elected in places like Acton. But again, it's very far, a very small percentage of all of us. You can barely count on your hands and your toes how many Asians are elected to any position in Massachusetts. Mm. So the fact that, you know, again, the Asian caucus is up to 8, you know, we represent probably not quite 50%, but, you know, close to 50% of all the elected Asians in the state, much less nationally. And even then, actually, a Massachusetts native, David Chu, who, a kid, I believe, grew up in Hingham, BC High kid, was a what do they call them in California? They're not called representatives. I think they're called
assemblymen. I think it's
assemblymen. Yeah, assemblymen. Basically, they're reps, but they're called assemblymen. You know, he just stepped down after 7 years. An assemblyman and that took the job as the city solicitor of the city of San Francisco.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, you know, good for him and congratulations. Mm-hmm. You know, he, I know he's not, you know, he's in California, but I mean, he's another local kid, so to speak, that did very well for himself in politics. And, you know, he's got a real big job for a major city. So, you know, we'll see where this takes us. I think one of the major challenges of being Asian American these days, as you point out, the Asian anti-Asian racism issues, you got to take the bull by the horns and just stand up for this issue and, you know, empower people of color, but also empower Asian Americans, as well as demonstrate an inclusive government, particularly for mayors, and also just stand up for us and just call it when you see it. It is, you know, if it looks like what it is, I'm going to refrain my picking my words carefully, but you know, you see it, you know what it is, call it what it is. Right. Sugar. Right, folks. I mean, you see it, and it is what it looks like. There's no reason why you should deny it's there.
Well, I'll be curious to see if you know, young Asian women are inspired by Michelle's victory in Boston and elsewhere across the state to maybe look into, you know, public service as a potential career path in the future.
Oh, absolutely. She is going to be very much inspiration. She's 36 years old. She's the youngest mayor the city has seen in probably well into 60 years. Mm-hmm. She has a long career path in front of her that's hers to dictate. It is a major metropolitan city despite the size. People forget Boston's an international city despite being one of the smallest international cities in the world. And again, it's 50% of the GDP in New England comes out of one place, Boston. New England. It's just not just the state of Massachusetts. Massachusetts represents 49% of GDP in New England. But when you really come right down to it, you know, Boston is the major shipping, transportation hub, education, technology. I mean, whether you hate it, like it or hate it, doesn't matter. It's the reality, you know, all goods from Maine and New Hampshire head to Boston. To leave the state and vice versa. Things coming into Maine, New Hampshire has to come through Boston.
Right.
So, you know, it's very, very important role of being the city of Boston. I agree with you. It's absolutely going to create inspiration for other folks to want to run for office.
Yeah.
you know, this age. Meanwhile, at home, it was a somewhat exciting night, actually.
Oh, you want to talk about it? Okay, sure.
Yeah, I mean, congratulations to our counselors. You know, we, you know, Dave McCarthy and Chuck Phelan and Andrew and Anthony Andronico. I can't enunciate properly today. Andronico, as well as you know, counselors No DeBona and Imahoni Ne Liang. But the most exciting race was school committee.
Really was. Yeah.
Yeah, Emily Lebo and Tina Cahill. And Tina is a first time coming on, and Doug Guttrell was able to beat Courtney Peridos by a hair, essentially, in these kind of races. I mean,
51 votes, yeah.
Just over, well, more, a little more than just a hair, but a hair enough. And Courtney had kind of an odd incumbency situation by her appointment. So it's actually interesting we have two incumbents fighting for a third slot in this kind of a race where you're in a pick up to three situation.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I think you'll still see Courtney very active in the school system, regardless. She always has been, and I'm sure will continue to be. And, you know, in 2 years, there'll be more seats open that she can run for again.
I agree with you. I mean, she has actually knocked my door twice. So people actually know where I live. You don't come down my way to knock my door. there's not a lot of voters. Good voters in my geographic zone. So I'm always very impressed whenever a candidate makes a little bit of an extra effort to come by and say hello, whether they leave a piece of lit or, you know, I catch him on my yard or something, mm-hmm. you know, any day of the week. It was a very good ground campaign, and we had a lot of first time folks run this year, this time as well. And a few people that have run before, but, you know, a lot more new folks, and hopefully, you're right, 2 years is an opportunity to run for city elections, and the mayor will be up, and they may be changing the air again. You just don't know. This is what his business is for.
I asked him last night. He'll never tell me. He just takes it one term at a time, he says, but I did ask him.
I'm fairly confident I'm fairly confident we'll probably see Mayor Kolbka.
He's got a lot of projects in the wings, I'm sure he wants to see through, yeah.
Yeah, I'm fairly confident we'll see him again in 2 years.
Yeah.
You're right. You know, a lot of things can change. I mean, remember Joe Finn left, finally decided after 14 years?
Yep.
He decided that, you know, he's done his time, and suddenly there was a shakeup with the council then, which created opportunity Imahoni came in that mm-hmm. round.
She was came over from the school committee. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, guys, I'm not going anywhere. I'm running for
election. I was going to add, just that was my next question, Tacky. Yeah,
I'm not going to beat him in the bush and down. And I'm feeling the speaker will be the speaker in 2022.
Okay. It was mentioned in the Quincy Book of Days last week, I think, that it was your 11th year since you were elected to your current position.
Yeah, this is term number six. It feels like yesterday. In many ways. I'll admit pandemic has changed how I perceive time, like a lot of us. I'm still enjoying how this goes. I enjoy my job. People know I have fun with it. I'm realistic. There are good days and bad days, like everything in life. And I do ride out those good and bad days like everyone else does in life. But I'm still having a lot of fun. And this is a game of seniority. I don't lie about that to folks. You know, the legislature is seniority driven, and the importance of just biding my time, so to speak, being patient, you know, understanding what's going on around me, and you know, making the right moments to ask for something. And now I'm in a leadership position for the last 3 years as a chairman, actually four now, 2017, 4 years now. And a chairman, and I have a lot of control over a number of policy issues, as well as being a manager of a committee, as well as my committee members with my other colleagues in the House. You know, they're on my committee. I manage the membership at that level. So, you know, it's we've talked a lot over the last year and a half. This is a lot of quality time we've had with me and Joe here, and you all watching us. But you know, hey, I mean. I tell folks when I'll be done with this at some point, but not today.
Okay. And that's when the cooking career takes off. Hey, why not?
You want a highly allergy friendly diet. You can come to my house, give
there my you go.
dietary issues.
But can we talk a little bit about redistricting, Techie, and how that's impacting our area here?
Absolutely. You know, we the House and Senate sent up to the governor's office the redistricting maps. The governor, I don't believe, has signed it yet for the House and Senate. The governor can veto those, but given the unique circumstances pursuant to state constitution, representatives have to live in that district for one full year prior to the next election. So in this case, it'll be November 8th, which is why the time of getting these bills up to the governor was very important. Senate does not have the requirement. Senate does not require a one-year residency.
Okay.
You just have to move in at some point. Congressional folks can actually move in afterwards. I mean, it's a whole, residency is an interesting thing. And for statewide offices, the Constitution also dictates residency requirements for when you can run for statewide office as well. But your reps are unique in the Constitution regarding the one-year residency full-year residency of the election. So that's why we had, you know, such a rush job, given the fact the census was slow in information, the Trump administration was very challenging on getting us data. Pandemic made it hard to collect it. And essentially what should have came out in April came out in September, which meant to us rushing through it. So what does it mean at home, guys? So here's what happened. Dan Hunt is no longer a Quincy delegation member starting in 2023. He will be pushed back over into the city of Boston. Bruce Ayers is going to reclaim that district, which is why I call it the best western section of the DuPont River.
That's a good way to put it, yeah. It's, I think it's Ward 3, Precinct 3.
Yep. And he will continue to also represent a big chunk of Randolph.
Okay.
And him and our neighbor, Bill Driscoll from Milton, will basically get split Randolph in half between the two of them. Our friend Mark Cusack from Braintree is leaving Randolph and picking up a precinct in Holbrook, so it'll be Braintree and Holbrook. I will remain totally in Quincy, and I go from 13 precincts to 14 precincts, which is the new version of Ward 5 Precinct 2, which now stretches essentially from Central Middle School to the Schuster Building and the Wheelhouse Diner in North Quincy.
Oh, okay. Yep.
So it's a very long Ward 5 precinct too, and it encompasses the entire roadway and parts of the sides going upbound. So also is also unique because this seat is a fully formed Ward 5. I was thinking about this the other day and talking to our good friend Michael Morrissey, who's been around a lot longer than I have. And then, you know, I asked him, when was the last time we had a full Ward 5 seat as a rep seat? And the answer is he doesn't remember either, because when he ran a rep, you know, Ward 5 was cut up. I know it was not the same geographic design, but it was still a non-unified ward. It was cut up between multiple reps when he ran in a 240 House. And that's why historically this has been a Ward 1 seat. So, you know, the Wallace neighborhood is mostly almost all Ward 5. And the Wallace neighborhood is unified in its rep seat for really the first time in before Michael Morrissey's time, which is saying a lot, actually.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's many, many years ago. Yeah.
Many years ago. He would remember it as better than I would. So, you know, there'll be all Ward 1, all Ward 5. You know, I'll have two precincts in Ward 4 and two precincts in Ward 3. So I basically got Hospital Hill, parts of Wallace and Hill. And then, you know, I have what we know as Brewer's Corner. As well as the old cornfields where Montilio's is.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it's a little bit of a zigzaggy, and I didn't draw the precinct lines. The city of Quincy drew precinct lines, but in good fortune to us, the city was able to put the census blocks inside the precinct lines fairly easily overall, which meant that when we did our redistricting, we were able to pretty much follow the precinct lines because we are drawing our districts by census block.
Sure, yep.
So our neighbors to the south, you know, Jamie Murphy in Weymouth, has pretty much stayed contiguous where he is now, you know, parts of Hingham. And a good speaker, you know, continues to be representing Quincy Point, parts of West Quincy, and follows the river on Weymouth down to Holbrook.
Mm-hmm.
And he loses a precinct to Mark Cusack in Holbrook, so he has half of Holbrook. Ward 2 in particular had grown a lot in the census. Which allowed the speaker to basically contract somewhat going northbound. And John Keenan has changed district in some ways, but not. In some ways, it's going back to a little bit of the old days, but not really. It's kind of strange if you look at the maps over the last four redistrictings. But the short of it is that, you know, this is still a Quincy Senate seat. It's always going to be a Quincy Senate seat for the next decade, and probably always going to be a Quincy Senate seat in the long term.
Population's growing, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So of course he contracted more back into Quincy. And so he got basically, he got the east side of Braintree now. So you get, the west side goes to Senator Timothy. The east side is John Keenan. He continues to travel through Holbrook into Rockland and now Hanover.
Okay.
Abington is no longer part of the district, and he loses a large portion of the west side of Braintree to Walter Timothy. And, you know, I came in the Senate when Michael Morrissey had Quincy, a third of Braintree, 7/8 of Rockland, half of Abington and all Norwell. And those going even further back in time, remember when Quincy was really Quincy, Avon, Braintree, and Hobart.
Wow, okay.
You know, going back further in time.
Yeah.
So the district has continued to strung southbound. And all the towns that Senator Keenan lost, you know, ends up in Senator O'Connor's district because there's only a senator that's next door that can actually touch it.
Interesting, yeah.
That configuration was done to make Senator Brady from Brockton's district a minority seat in the Senate. As you can see, how the dominoes shift around. In the interim, both Bruce Ayers and our friend Bill Driscoll are also minority districts.
Hmm.
So south of Boston, the two big ones are Bruce Ayers and Bill Driscoll, and then you don't get to another minority rep seat until you get to Fall River and New Bedford.
Okay, so there have been some changes for sure. And I know at least one, I think the 7th congressional district also got shifted around a bit, but doesn't impact Quincy.
No, I mean, the congressional districts are big shift is going to be Western Massachusetts,
mm-hmm.
because there's just not any growth out there. It's right. not. Everybody's moving east. Senator Lynch, I'm sure Congressman Lynch's district, you know, he was a senator. People forget he was the state yep. senator from Southie. That's where I actually first met Steve. You know, he pretty much was close on the number anyway. I mean, obviously it's not Zach, but he was inside the red zone. So I didn't think it was going to be a whole lot of shift on his part. And they still desire to keep a minority congressional seat, which is a Anna Presley seat. Mm-hmm. Given the large minority number growth in Boston, it wasn't too difficult just to keep rejoining Boston and somehow create a lollipop line to Randolph. Continue a minority congressional district.
Right.
It's very difficult for any of the other congressional districts to do that because they don't have sufficient density.
Right, yeah, exactly. We talk a little bit about ARPA funding, Tacky, and how it might affect Quincy, the federal pandemic relief money.
Yeah, we had a pretty long couple of days last Thursday and Friday. Actually, we talked last Thursday before the debate began.
Yep, that's right.
About the ARPA funds. And you know, it addresses a lot of stuff from climate change to workforce training to housing issues, as well as housing authorities, a very broad range of stuff. And we combined the money from the FY21 surplus, which is about $1.4 billion, give or take.
Mm-hmm.
And then we took a portion of the Fed money, which is under $5 billion. So we took a portion out of the form of $3.8 billion package. Let's see, 1.4 minus 3.8 gives like 2.4, right? $2.6 billion of that $4-ish billion. So the most of the money that's left in the federal trust that we have, the ARPA money, is generally directed towards large infrastructure projects, meaning roads and bridges, that we'll go back to again once we find out what the federal package is down in Washington under $3.5 trillion. Infrastructure package.
Right.
Once we do what that looks like, then we'll come back and revisit this issue.
Okay.
And of course, you know, there's that still that almost $2 trillion of budget money for programs that the state will get a good chunk of. So we're still waiting to see what happens there. But one of the big exciting pieces of this is that, a substantial amount of money, $100 million, is going to go into windmill development. We want to build windmills in Massachusetts. Given a huge windmill block island project, you know, we approved twice variations of bills to have the state buy wind power. And the bids were very, very good for Massachusetts. It's just waiting for these things to get constructed. So if you guys don't know, you just don't put one up in your backyard. These windmills are going in the water and they got to find bedrock and they're going to be monstrous. So we would like to have those jobs in Massachusetts and focused on the South Coast. For those who come from there, know there, the unemployment rate is still very challenging down there.
Yeah.
So bringing the major industry such as windmill construction and repair and other ancillary business associated with it is a huge economic benefit to the South Coast as well as Rhode Island, quite frankly, because the South Coast and Rhode Island actually have very interconnected economies. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's a huge piece on clean energy and job creation. Locally, we got a few dollars here and there for various things. We got some money for a dredging project. People in here talk about dredging locally in Quincy Bay. We got a little bit to start this process going. Got $600,000, which is not the whole nut. There's more money I got to find, but we got to get started somewhere. So hopefully there's other funding opportunities, whether it be bond bill or cash, that I can continue to add to that kitty, so to speak, on putting money together. We got $400,000 for the Squantum boat ramp, very strong project with Bruce Ayers and John Keenan to get ferry service. So we give $400,000 to get that project moving again. This is all piecemealing money together. We've got to eventually make this work. I got $200,000 for QCAP to upgrade its food pantry. The pandemic has shown the need for massive upgrades in food pantries, especially given the need for social distancing. And we're not clear what the future holds of Delta, right? So there's some question marks. And Quincy Resources has a mobile food truck program that is moving forward. Another interesting piece about this bill includes money for Afghan refugee resettlement. We're looking at probably about 2,000 plus Afghan refugees coming in next year into Massachusetts part of resettlement. Refugees in Massachusetts is not a new thing. We've been doing this for decades. Cambodians, Vietnamese, Sudanese, Nepalese. Believe it or not, Nepalese had a natural disaster issue that made them refugees. That earthquake that leveled multiple villages. And actually, these Nepalese are here now. So, I mean, Afghan refugees has a long history of Massachusetts being very welcoming and helping other folks that have been displaced to build a new life here. So, we set aside some money for that. I suspect we may need some more money down the road, but right now we're looking at about a couple thousand really quickly coming Afghan refugees. Other things about this, we dedicate some things to people of color. So, for example, particularly in education, there's not a lot of folks that are people of color that are educators. So there's actually a segment of this ARPA funding to focus in on that. And I actually got an amendment approved with the help of the Asian Caucus to ensure a complete inclusiveness on that program. So, we make sure that not just Black and Indigenous people, but also Latinx, Asians, immigrants, or refugees, as part of the encouraging and retention of educators in Massachusetts. People tend to forget, immigrants and refugees are a big part of our state population, and they're very important to have them in our school systems, both at K-12 and higher ed, to provide a diversity of experience and cultural understanding of the number of different people that live here.
Right. Yeah, I know Quincy Public Schools are making a concerted effort to try and make the staff, educators, more reflective of the student body.
Yes. And the ARPA bill actually has some commitment to do that and also to encourage more of it. So, I mean, that's an amendment I got through. There was not money attached to it, but it's important language. And, I kind of explain to folks, higher education created this term BIPOC. Black and people of color. Now, we talk about Asian racism issues quite a bit the past year, but as I like to remind folks, people only remember the Black, the Indigenous, and then whatever. And this is just human nature. This is just how it is. And this was created by higher education, this term, but not understanding the real ramifications of real life. In real life, people only remember the parts they can identify, not the parts they can't identify. So, one of the goals of the Asian Caucus is to ensure that all people are properly identified in legislation of most people of color, not just say two of the aggregate groups, make sure all aggregate groups are properly reflected. Because this is how people think. You say, Black, Indigenous, people of color, they just think of the first two words that are real words. The other three words don't mean anything.
Right, right. Because they're not defining. They're very ambiguous.
Exactly. Welcome to the challenges of my life, folks. I deal with my entire life. So, now that, in position to address state policy to bring greater inclusiveness has always been my objective, you know, to not forget other people of color, but also forget about immigrants and refugees that are here as well. So, you know, very thankful with the speaker as well as the Ways and Means Chair, Aaron Merkowitz, you know, on putting up with me.
A thorn in the side.
Next time we can talk, get the speaker on the line with you. I'm sure he will be on again at some point. You can discuss about the difficulties of dealing with Tacky.
Oh, that's a whole other show, Tacky. But I mean, that's how the Constitution designed the legislature, right? Is to be advocates for the people.
And diversity, to me, is not just about race in terms of the legislature, and not just about gender. It's diversity of life.
Mm.
And I think people forget that about legislature sometimes because they see it as a Democrat Republican issue, not different walks of life issue. So. You know, there's always a large rotation of electeds. We, I think, have at least 8 reps not coming back. There will be more retiring this year as we go along. And we'll turn over between 16 and 25, give and take, you know, a few here and there almost every year. You don't get like the big situation where Speaker Dilio and, you know, Speaker Mariano's group of well into 50, I think it was 54 plus a bunch of special elections on top of that. And then you have my class of 39 special elections became 41. We don't get that rotation that big that quickly. But, you know, you get about 16 to 20, 25 at a time. And but it's important that you get people from different walks of life, different age groups. And now redistricting, you know, perhaps more diversity of different community outlooks. Mm-hmm. So every community we live in, the people that have a different outlook in life, and your elected officials reflect that all.
Yeah, it's based on their life experiences. Right, exactly, yeah.
So we want to have always as much as people with as much life experiences as possible in the legislature to give us more diversity of opinions regarding policymaking.
Mm-hmm. And the policies are as equitable as possible, right?
Absolutely. When the sad thing is not being in the state house, in fact, I'm going to spend time with other members because it's an opportunity to find out, you know, where they grew up, you know, what they've done for a living, what their family's like, and we share stories. And, you know, when people want to talk about policy issue between before my committee and between us, we talk about life.
Mm-hmm.
And they start to understand why they've advocating for certain policy positions.
Yeah, it's almost like a, you know, a brainstorming session. Out of that, new policies emerge.
Absolutely. Same thing with city councils, mm-hmm. Same thing with board of selectmen, same thing in elected town meeting. Open town meeting is a little bit different.
Yes.
Those who know what open town meeting is like, but elected town meeting members, and of course, members of Congress. And as much as people watch the 24-hour cable news, which I do not enjoy, you know, get this caught up in this kind of really, you know, dichotomy of Congress, it overlooks the fact that when people are advocating, they're advocating for people that reflect who they are too, mm-hmm. their reflection, people they represent.
Yeah. Can we talk a little bit about the situation with unemployment in Massachusetts, Tacky? Where does it stand right now?
I think I haven't looked at it this week, but I believe it's still floating right into the 6% zone.
Yeah.
We do warn people that it's a little bit deceptive because if you're no longer unemployment, you're not considered part of unemployment.
Correct. Yeah.
Seasonal workers are not adjusted for this number. Seasonal workers are going to add a couple more percentage points because tourist season's coming to a close probably another 5 or so weeks.
Yes.
And then you also have people that are unable to work because of severe disability or age. So that's also a factor. So it's under 6%, but we all know that's a little higher than it is because of those other factors. But I mean, people are still having challenges finding people to go to work. It's very apparent when you go eat out or go to retail, there's still help wanted signs out there. It's a very competitive price structure still. It is a workers' benefit market on salaries and wages. You know, and we're going to see how the winter holds. Just like last winter, we're holding our breath again. The Delta doesn't get strange in terms of its infection rate, and the vaccination is sufficiently high enough to prevent massive outbreaks. We are still getting infection rates, don't get me wrong, but we're trying to avoid a surge. As we move indoors and people try to do holiday travel and people want to go traveling places that have lower vaccination rates, the risk level changes, especially a disease that is so contracting so quickly with Delta, and now Delta Plus, there's a plus now. Contract so quickly, it can bring it back to you and potentially infect others that are unvaccinated.
Right. In terms of in-person unemployment services, have those started back up again? Do you know?
Not really.
Okay.
I mean, the workforce development office in Quincy Center is open. I had actually talked to Ron Yukabuchi a few weeks ago, but it's still a lot remote by appointment only. Okay. It's still a precaution. Unemployment benefits, I still feel calls about that. I mean, extended unemployment benefits ended September. I mean, right. There is no more.
Right.
Folks, already got their first extension, isn't getting a second extension. So, people are out there. But also, don't forget, people are retiring now. Mm-hmm. People are retiring. I suspect going to next spring, there'll be more people retiring as they come to the decision that, given this very life-changing experience we've had, how do you really want to live the next perhaps 10, 15, or 20 years of your days if you're healthy? Left. Mm-hmm. I think you can see that both in the private and public sector. These teachers are already moving into retiring earlier than expected as well. Right now. So there'll be probably more opportunities in different forms of public service going into next summer as people continue to look at their calendars and decide that, I'd rather try to live my life healthy and happy. I have it as opposed to continue to be working and perhaps in some cases putting yourself at high risk of potentially getting COVID.
Right. Yes, there are a lot of reprioritizations going on for sure. I think you're right. It will continue as well for sure into the future. What should we look forward to in your local district, Jackie, in the next couple of months?
Halloween's come and gone, but the Montclair Walls and Association party could not go on because of the rain last Saturday.
That's right.
And they postponed it to Sunday from 11 to 4, 11 to 5, I believe, again, at Bishop's Field. So people want to go out to that. It's an outdoor event. It's a family event. There'll be all the kids-related stuff and a live band and a food truck. Got food trucks. Remember the days we just had like people barbecues and you hope things didn't go bad at a park?
Yes. Yeah,
I am older than you realize, folks. I do remember some stuff. But yes, there'll be food and entertainment.
Right.
The College Neck Congregational Church is having their fair on the 13th. Hills Neck. So you people want to drop in and say hi. My nephew has a play this weekend at Quincy High School. Okay. I don't even know what it is. I just been told I gotta go.
You have to be there. Yes,
I'll be there with a mask on, sitting in the audience. Will people see me able to smile? But obviously, enjoying watching my nephew's senior year at Quincy High.
And, nice.
Enjoying these family moments like everyone else, right?
Yeah.
Then what else is going on? Our Veterans Day is coming up next week.
Right.
I may have talked to you before Veterans Day, but the Veterans Day parade is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Weather pending. Starting around. Quincy High School area, walking to the World War I Memorial, the Doughboy on Hancock and Fredericksburg, and concluding at Marymount Park. That's going to be on Veterans Day. People want to come out, weather pending. And then we got the Christmas parade at the end of the month, Thanksgiving weekend, which isn't on. I still haven't got my official notice, but you do this long enough, you know what it's going to be, you know how it's going to go. But I mean, obviously, I'll get specific instructions, especially with all the construction downtown Quincy,
mm-hmm.
about entry points and where you line up to march and so forth. Again, so it's weather dependent.
Right.
What else is there going on in events? Those are the ones I am aware of right now. I'm sure there's more coming. And I also remind folks, we go into holiday season. And there's a number of local charitable organizations that do great work. Whether it be churches or food pantries or senior services or youth services,
mm-hmm.
please give some consideration on making any kind of a donation of any kind to any of these organizations locally, because it's been a tough time for them. They have not been able to hire conventional fundraisers. We can pack a room of 300 or 400 people at Granite Links, for example,
right?
Who does great work for our local organizations. People still want to be very cautious and aware of other people's health issues. So, if goes there listening here, if you got, pick a local organization that you really support, maybe consider writing a check or going online and making a payment through credit card.
Yep, you really will be helping your neighbor. They all do yeoman's work right here in the Quincy community. So absolutely.
Mm-hmm. It's very important to keep our money local. And it's not just buying local, but it's also donating local.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sure. And as always, you're available, Tacky, if folks want to get in touch with you.
617-722-2014, 617-722-2014. I do understand there has been yet another issue regarding our phone system. So do smash a button, but if it becomes unbearable because we've been having some technical difficulties again, I've heard some from folks trying to call us. Email me at tacky.chan@mahouse.gov, tacky.chan@mahouse.gov. I do get a ton of email, although it's a little bit better since I finished the last set of hearings. We had an executive session on Monday, so that helped out too, as we execed out some bills. And of course, State Representative Tacky Chan is the Facebook page. We put my public hearings up there, and our recent executive session went up on Monday. So you can see how an executive session of a committee is run if you really want to spend 30 minutes watching us going through the agenda items.
It could be a civics lesson for folks.
Yeah, I'm not going to tell you it's exciting watching folks. I do crack a few jokes. Am I funny? No. But please do not leave a comment about that. I generally discourage social media contacts because it's just, you'd be surprised exactly between just the volume of invitations as well as spam and scam stuff I get, particularly on things like Facebook and Twitter. Because the nature of being a public official, you get all that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's just like, this is crazy. You're trying to figure out what's what.
Sure.
So definitely do comments or Facebook messaging to me. Definitely send an email or phone call.
Yeah, use the official lines of communication if it's an important matter, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, and we also the website, tackychin.org, for some phone numbers you can find, so you can avoid talking to us if you can find stuff on your own. But yeah, I think people underestimate exactly the nature of a public figure on social media, where it's not really constituents reading out to you. It's these crazy scamsters are all over the place because it's just easy target.
Sure. All right. Appreciate it. Always good to talk to you, Tacky.
Always enjoy seeing you, Joe. Hope to see you in a week.
Sounds good. Bye-bye.
Bye.